Monday, March 19th, 2018. From Slate, it's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. Now, I want you to know you're hearing me today, and I am here. I'm in the room next to where I am now. So I'm recording this in a room, but today my physical body is the room next to where this was recorded, because what Slate is doing, what the Slate podcasters are doing, we're engaging in a retreat. I find it's very hard to actually have new activities for retreats. I've been going to retreats as long as I've been working. It's kind of the same thing, because here's my theory. It's very difficult to propose in advance in retreats. You know what I mean? Like, you can have a new idea, everyone's excited about it, but as soon as someone says, well, that's certainly in advance, well, then it's out the door when it comes to retreats. I have some ideas for some other organizations that might want to engage in retreats. For instance, when dermatologists do retreats, I'd avoid breakout sessions. I'm just saying. And then there comes the Trump White House. I think the different parts of the Trump White House might improve communication or team cohesiveness with a retreat. For instance, HUD, the people of HUD can be tasked with building a tower out of popsicle sticks. Here are some constraints. They can't name the tower Trump Tower. They can enlist the help of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard to build it through backdoor channels from Baku. They have to keep the total price under $31,000, and they can't offer it up as actual housing. I know Carson was on board up until that last point. How about some members of the Trump White House, the legal team, could do a human knot exercise? It's classic. The constraints, you can't let Michael Cohen untangle it. He would do a very bad job. How about a scavenger hunt? This is a good one. I do these with my kids. So here's the task. Find negative news stories for which a Trump White House staffer was a major source. And if you can name everyone who gave a blind quote, you'll win a point or a popsicle stick. And how about trust falls? In fact, we have tape of some of the Trump retreat trust falls going on. Reince, you're up. Okay, Rex, it's your job. HR. And finally, instead of a ropes course, how about we skip right to handcuffs? So I won't be spieling today. I'll be playing Two Truths and a Lie with the folks from TrumpCast. I'll be doing a trust fall and hoping the entire cast of Represent will be there to catch me. Represent, guys. Represent. But never fear. Maria Konnikova is here to play our favorite game. And the topic is toxic receipts. Did you know this? That the receipts from a cashier, they're coded in something that people are freaking out about? I didn't even know it. In fact, I don't even know if it's bullshit. And that's what Maria's here for. The Defender is a beautiful car, but beauty is, of course, sometimes only skin deep. Not with the Defender. Let's talk about the interior. It's robust, built with integrity. Yes, it's designed iconically, the exterior. That's what compelled me. My neighbor Jay says, Mike, you see what's on the block? It's a Defender. And I look down the block, and indeed there is. And me and Jay the neighbor and Michelle, we gather around the Defender. We peer in the window. I have to say, I don't want to make this a little too tawdry, but we lust, or perhaps we kvel. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. We looked at the cargo capacity, more room for the gear. There's really a wide range of adventures. The Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender. The New York Times' Nick Kristof is a really good reporter and an interesting op-ed writer. He's one of the few people to win Pulitzer Prizes in commentary and international reporting. I mean, if you want to really feel bad about the Rohingya, you go to Nick Kristof. However, there is some evidence that he's gone a little off the deep end. He's been testing his pee. He's been writing about the results of his urine in the pages of the New York Times. He's not friends with a Nazi, but that's kind of awkward behavior for a Times columnist. Awkward, yes, but bullshit? That is the open question. Joining us now is Maria Konnikova. She is the author of The Biggest Bluff and recent cover girl of Bluff magazine, which is not about rock formations in Montana. I read Bluff, or I do when I'm in a casino and there's a free magazine there. She's on the cover of Bluff magazine. All right, that's not our headline. And we're playing Is That Bullshit? The Stuff Nick Kristoff is Obsessed With Edition. Hello, Maria. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me, Mike.
Had you read, before I flagged it, have you been reading Kristoff's columns?
On and off. I've been traveling a lot for my Bluff magazine cover shoots.
Yes.
So not as regularly as I might have done.
Now, as you travel, you might find yourself in a different town and maybe you're lacking some eye makeup removal or maybe some nut mixture with 50% less peanuts. So you go to the local CVS and you get a receipt.
I do.
Now, as we know, the danger of a receipt from CVS is that it could wrap around your neck and kill you, like the famous dancer Maria Callas. I think it was Maria Callas. We'll check that. But Nick Kristoff says there are other dangers to receipts.
Yes.
What the heck's he talking about?
Well, apart from the choking hazard and also the fire hazard. Don't forget flames, right?
Oh, yeah,
it's paper.
Yeah.
It burns.
Call your brother's apartment full of receipts.
Yes. Yeah. Receipts are printed on something called thermal paper.
Ooh.
And thermal paper has something that you and I have talked about in the past, BPA.
Oh, yes.
Remember?
Yes.
We talked about plastics and BPA. The question is, can this BPA from the thermal paper somehow make it into your system and do all of the bad things that these types of chemicals have been shown to do sometimes in high concentrations in mice and rats?
Right.
Disrupt our endocrine system, cause cancer, like breast cancer and reproductive organ cancer, ovarian, uterine, prostate, et cetera.
Let's just name organs.
Yeah, just name some organs. Yep. Yep. So can it do that?
Can it do that? Now, when the BPA is your water bottle, you are drinking water that's touching it and ingesting it.
Yes.
So maybe it's a bad chemical, but I thought the problem was leaching into the water as opposed to just a receipt, which I suppose you touch it, but they put it in the bag, you throw it out. I mean, you're not eating the receipt. Does that come into play?
I mean, I don't know. You're not eating the receipt.
Right, right. You could be receiptophagic, I suppose.
So, yeah, there are lots of issues here.
Yeah.
But first, let's just talk about, has anyone ever studied receipts and BPA and your health? And the answer as of a few years ago, 2014, as of what, 4 years ago, is yes.
Yes.
People have studied this.
Okay.
So there was a study that came out that looked at people who would have an occupational hazard of receipts.
Ah, now I
cashiers.
Understand. Now I understand.
Right? So these are the people who handle the most receipts in the kind of most concentrated amount of time. If we're going to see health problems in anyone, this is the population where we're going to see them, right?
Right, right.
Because this is like when you're looking at any new environmental toxin or anything where you want to test exposure, you first go to like the target workers.
Right.
Right.
So this was why secondhand smoke, there's a lot of good evidence that it's bad, but you need a lot of exposure. And I remember people saying, well, why ban secondhand smoke? Who is in a bar that often? The answer is a bartender or someone who
works
at a bar.
Exactly. So you study.
So this is essentially the equivalent, right?
Exactly. So this is the equivalent. So they looked at a number of cashiers and non-cashiers and measured their urine levels of BPA.
Yeah.
So they did what Nick Kristoff did.
Them.
Yes. Well, they did tell them. And what they found was that there was a ton of variation. So they looked at before shift and after shift, and it was really, really weird because some cashiers had higher levels in their urine before their shift than after their shift, and some had more after than before. And basically, the data were really inconclusive except for one thing, which is that marginally cashiers had more in their urine than non-cashiers.
Okay.
We're talking about people who handle, on average, at least one receipt a minute.
Okay.
But they're not touching them for very long because most people don't touch them for very long. And
I guess the next question is, so what? I mean, how much more, and is
that bad? We've talked about this a little bit with water, and we even discussed that the alternatives to BPA in the plastic water bottles are probably much, much worse, and that you really have to leave the water in the water bottle in the sun for a long period of time for there to be any effects. And you correctly point out that people have to ingest the water, and you don't normally ingest receipts. At least you and I don't.
No.
We're not judging. But so there was another study that actually was like, well, how does it absorb into the skin? And they used hand sanitizer. So they, because hand sanitizer actually makes your skin more absorbent to certain things like BPA. And so they looked at whether people used hand sanitizer and then handled receipts.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that you absorbed more if you hand sanitized and then handled the receipt. However, it only really mattered if you then went on to eat with your hands without actually washing your hands in between touching the receipt and ingesting the food. That was the crucial variable in the middle. Then they actually looked at the data with the cashiers, and they found that a few cashiers ate on the job and ate out of containers that actually had BPA and others did not.
Yeah.
And so this is another kind of one of those variables.
And also a very popular dish among cashiers is receipt casserole.
Yes, this is true.
That could skew the findings. Well, this, you know who the bad guy in this is, well, Nick Kristof. But It's the hand sanitizer. You think, oh, I don't need to wash my hands. I'm using the sanitizer. The sanitizer is making it worse. You need to wash your hands from the sanitizer.
Yeah. So basically, if you're handling receipts, first, don't put on hand sanitizer and then handle the receipts, because the receipt's the dirty thing.
Right.
And if you do that for whatever reason, which is fine, you know, once again, no judgment, then go and wash your hands before putting your hand in your mouth.
Right. You know what a lot of the bodegas in New York use is a little half lemon. Have you seen the half lemon to touch
it with their fingers on the receipt?
We got to do a study on that.
Yeah, we should do a half lemon study. Well, actually, I would guess that that's also bad, because water and actually moisture increases the absorption.
But maybe the acidity of the lemon counteracts that.
Who knows? Who knows? And these days, I mean, we've just started studying receipts, but
can I just say that
we are experiencing fewer and fewer receipts in everyday life, because most places now have completely paperless checkout.
Yeah.
And you really have to try to get a receipt.
Then they'll say, can I text you or email it? And maybe you'll say yes. But you know what that leads to? Screen time.
Exactly.
More screen time.
Exactly.
That's bad for us too.
Yeah, BPA and screen times.
Yeah.
Yep. For sure.
The light,
for
the
sure.
blue light keeping us up.
Yep.
You can't win.
No, you can't win.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I found was that I really don't mind touching receipts as long as I'm not eating. But you know what? You know me. We've talked about me being a little germophobic.
Yes.
I'm never going to touch a receipt and then eat. Even before this.
We've broken bread, and upon your insistence,
we did.
You, your own bread, and me, my own.
Yes.
I tried to break your bread.
Yes.
You were like, no.
No, absolutely not. The only person touching my bread is me. So these few studies that do exist show that it is under certain circumstances possible to absorb BPA from thermal paper, aka receipts. However, these levels are very low, and they disappear actually pretty soon after your exposure to said receipts. And still, the number one way that we can absorb it is through the mouth rather than through the skin. And so don't go changing your diet right now. If you don't already have an addiction to eating receipt paper, it's probably not a good time to start.
What is the effect of, if there is slightly elevated levels for a little time in someone's body from touching receipts?
None that we know of.
Oh, great. It could possibly, under extreme circumstances, slightly boost the levels of this chemical that, if they are boosted, we don't really know what they do.
Right. Well, we know what they do in high quantities. Mm-hmm. They are endocrine disruptors.
Right,
they can cause cancers. No one is disputing that.
Yeah.
But we're not rats. I mean, I think that's a caveat to all toxicology studies.
Yeah.
And maybe if you're a cashier who's also a breastfeeding mother, because it also absorbs very heavily into breast milk.
Right.
And it's actually much worse for developing infants than it is for grown adults. So if you are a cashier who is currently breastfeeding, you can wear gloves. You know, wear gloves when handling receipts.
A cashier is currently breastfeeding.
Who is currently breastfeeding,
like,
yes.
While
doing checkout.
Paper, plastic, and could you hold my baby for a second?
Exactly. Then maybe you would want to consider it, even though still I don't think there's any very good evidence that it's going to do anything bad.
All right. Let's take it on two levels. A consumer, should consumers avoid receipts?
Just because they're icky.
Okay.
And because why would you want receipts in your wallet? I feel like I spend so much time cleaning receipts out from my wallet and my bag that I just want that out of my life. Look at your wallet.
All right, here we're going. We have a $4 off coupon.
Excellent. That's not a receipt.
We have a check I need to cash.
I'll take it.
We have a bunch of bills. Now, here we have the motherload, all the coffee. Here's a receipt from a jewelry store. Here's a receipt from a doctor. Yeah, because like he's going to give me my money back if my health turns bad.
Yeah.
Here's a receipt for laundry.
Mm-hmm.
5 pounds, one pillow, one blanket, $28. That's a lot. And then more.
It's expensive.
Dollars. So what I'm saying, I think what we're saying is I actually at this point only have two receipts, including the doctor receipt, but I have.
And the laundry, three.
Oh, yeah, three.
Yeah,
so am I going to die is the question.
Yes, assuredly. But so am I.
Yes.
We are all going to die.
Yes. And finally, someone in the receipt game, in the big receipt biz, should they avoid handling receipts? Is that bullshit that receipts could be harmful to them?
It's mostly bullshit. Just don't hand sanitize, then handle receipts, then eat.
Then breastfeed.
Yeah. As long as you avoid that causal chain, you should be totally fine.
And luckily for the American worker, all retail is going away anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we don't have to worry about it.
Once we're all just working for Jeff Bezos, we'll be free of receipts.
Yes.
Yeah. Maria Konnikova is the author of the forthcoming The Biggest Bluff, but she was honest with us here in this edition of Is That Bullshit? Thank you, Maria.
Thank you, Mike.
Oh, and by the way, I guess the last Is That Bullshit question. Should Nick Kristof be worried about receipts more than the Rohingya?
Quick thing, is it okay that we're joking about a slow motion genocide?
I don't think receipts are that bad. I don't think... She fell. Off her chair. Like with a big breeze. Like that truck on the Verrazano.
That was so good.
This episode is brought to you by The Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about The Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort, and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters in hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And that's it for today's show. The Gist was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé, who is manning the name tag table. Please stop taking the permanent markers, people. All right, he's down to two. If you need senior producer Mary Wilson, she will be at the Helium Station. This is where you write your workplace stressor on a balloon and you let it go. If Pierre would just stop taking her goddamn markers. Executive producer of Slate Podcast, Steve Lickteig, leading the retreat and leading the memory wall exercise. This year's memory wall will not include February 3rd, 2017, for reasons that are explained in last week's company-wide email. The Gist, due to trust fall exercises sustained last year, we're trying a tug-of-war demonstration. Bring gloves. Some of us have something to prove. Oompa-roo-da-peru-do-peru, and thanks for listening.